Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today we are discussing a topic so big and so important that everybody has to deal with it at one time or another. What is that topic? Forgiveness. Probably one of the most difficult things that you need to do. So what is forgiveness? Why should we do it? And why is it so very important to us? Kristen Robertson is an executive coach and consultant, and she is the author of A Forgiveness Journal, Letting Go of the Past. Kristen is an expert teacher of emotional intelligence, values in the workplace, and leadership skills. She is passionate about teaching forgiveness because of the benefits it's provided for both herself and for her clients. And today, Kristen joins me on the line from Texas, so not too far away from me, as a matter of fact. So good morning, Kristen, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Denise. It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, I am so looking forward to this topic. I mean, it's something I think everyone, it's a human condition. We all struggle with it.
Certainly is, yes.
So tell us a little bit about you and how you came to this point in your journey. I mean, I know you're an online entrepreneur. I know that you're an author. How did you get to where you started writing and teaching about forgiveness?
Oh, that's an interesting story. I've actually been a consultant to the call centers industry that provides technical support or computer support for the last 12 years. And increasingly over the last maybe 5 years, I felt like I wasn't getting to the right people. People would ask me to come in and do customer service skills training or kind of a turnaround in their call center. And what I realized is that I wasn't getting to the right people. There was a lack of values such as forgiveness in the workplace. And over the last year and a half, I've been slowly turning my business around to talk about values in the workplace. And it was my own journey in forgiving a number of past business partners and business colleagues mm-hmm. that really opened my eyes to what forgiveness can give you. And it really is a benefit to the person who does the forgiving. It's an inside job, you know, and I can tell you from personal experience in forgiving several business colleagues and partners that the peace that comes from it really benefits your business. It's not just a touchy-feely kind of thing, oh, you should do it because people tell you you should do it, but it really benefits you. Right. So, yeah. So it's been
I have a quick question, though. I mean, I understand the concept of forgiveness. I try to do it myself, and I try to forgive myself a lot as well.
Oh, no kidding.
But I don't think, and this is just my personal spin on it, I don't think that forgiveness means you need to stick your head back in that particular lion's mouth.
Oh, I totally agree, Denise.
Okay. It's like, I'll forgive you, but you're not messing with me anymore, Bob. Now I'm aware. I'm on to you now. But we can, you know, be cordial acquaintances, but whatever it was in the past, that's done.
I couldn't agree more, and I think that's
okay.
One of
so
the...
I'm doing okay. All right. Woohoo!
Yeah. Yes, I call it forgiveness with accountability.
And oh, there you go.
Yeah, especially in the workplace, it's important that we talk about forgiveness within that context.
Right. So, well, if you don't, you wind up carrying around a kind of a low-level grudge that just never moves you forward.
Yes, exactly. And there are times when you need to say goodbye to someone who's hurt you. But mm-hmm. if you can do it with a clear heart and the peace that comes from forgiving, then you can do it very, very maturely and very cleanly. There won't be a whole lot of mess and drama to it. But in the workplace, it's important that we realize that once people have shown us that they're not holding up their end of the bill, that it's important that we end our relationship with them, whether it's an employee or a customer. there are lines past which we don't want to go because it's setting good boundaries for yourself.
I love that phrase, and I use it a lot when I'm talking with even family members or I'm talking with people that I coach or mentor. The only person, in charge of your boundaries is you, and you have to be able to recognize what those boundaries are and find a graceful and elegant way of saying, this is my boundary. My elegant way of saying it is, this is the line in the sand. You poke your nose over it, I'll bloody your nose. It's not particularly elegant, but they get the message.
Right.
It works.
I'm sure it does. And that's setting good boundaries for yourself.
Can you give me a for instance in a workplace, because that's really what we're primarily interested in, being in online entrepreneurs, even though we're working kind of on our own, we're very much in a workplace. We're dealing with people who are our team members, we're dealing with clients, we're dealing with vendors and other resources. And I would love to have some for instances when you're dealing kind of virtually with people, if you have any.
Yes, I've had a situation where a client really annoyed me, and it was a client that I knew was a good client to keep. It wasn't a boundary issue, but they just were pushing all my buttons and really making me hop. And I remember one night getting done with work, and I was making brownies that night, and I took the bowl of brownie mix under my arm, and with my other hand I started beating the batter. You know how you do that? You have to do it with your hand rather than with the mixer. And I imagined that I was hitting the head of my client every time I took a stroke with that bowl of brownie mix, and it really helped me get things out. So that's a good
example.
Yeah,
but what did it do to the brownies? They're
so well, actually, they came out just fine because they're kind of.
I bet they're more like a cake.
Yeah. No kidding. But customers can drive you crazy. Your partners can drive you crazy. It was actually, I think I mentioned it before, that it was actually my business partner that pushed me to finding a way to have forgiveness in my life. And it was kind of a hard time because this person pulled out of a business venture, and it was a very hurtful time. And for about 9 months, I carried around such anger and vengeance and bitterness and resentment toward that person and toward myself. And I finally said, there's got to be a better way. And that's when this process, the 7-step process that I elaborate on in my book, came to me. And it is based on journaling, but it's also based on getting those emotions out, which goes back to the brownie story where you just have to get those emotions out somehow.
Well, let me ask you this. You say you walked around for about 9 months, and I know that this is kind of something that just sticks with you at a level in the back of your head. It's always with you. How did that make you feel physically?
Oh,
were you
just
noting
horrible.
How bad you felt at the time? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not good for you.
Denise, that is so true. It's really physically not good for you because it's like you're walking through quicksand. And it keeps pulling you down and grabbing your legs, so you can't go forward. And I like to say to every entrepreneur that you need to practice forgiveness in your life so that you can move your business forward, because otherwise you're being held by the past. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Do you see that in your practice also?
Well, I see it in everything I do. I just, years ago when I was still right brain predominant, I can access both sides of my brain, and years ago I was predominantly right-brained, and it dawned on me that that was a really silly place for me to live because I always made passionate mistakes, if you will. So I made a deliberate and conscious decision to move into my left brain, and I access my right brain at Christmas, yes, about it. But for the most part, I'm predominantly left-brained. I'm very logical and analytical, and that works for me. I don't get myself into trouble. I also don't have to carry around the burden of guilt or angst or hatred or any of those really negative things that just, like you say, they weigh you down. I mean, I felt terrible. Yeah, I would catch myself being in the middle of a really important project and my mind would wander off to something or somebody who had really either hurt me or I had hurt myself. And I found that I wasn't being at all efficient. And it was a remarkable time for me to say, look to the past for lessons and nothing else. Don't live in the past. Don't dwell in the past. And if whatever this person did was so egregious and you no longer have anything to do with this person, let them go. God bless them. Let them go.
God bless
they were
them
there for a reason. They're gone now.
That's wonderful.
But
that's
I had
wonderful.
To move into my left brain to do that.
Yeah.
And it was kind of dusty in there, but, you know, I cleaned it out and made a nice home.
That's great. That's wonderful that you were able to do that. And what you're saying is exactly right, that when we finally get to that peace that forgiveness allows us, we're able to move our businesses forward. So actually that's the test for have you forgiven someone, is pre-forgiveness. Every time you think about that person, you probably have a physical sensation of either your stomach churns or your shoulders tense up or you grit your teeth and say, oh, I just hate that person. I can't believe what they did to me. And post-forgiveness, you test yourself by, you know, randomly thinking of that person and seeing if you don't have those automatic thoughts or feelings in your body.
Right.
So if you get to that feeling of calm, then you know you've been successful. Or even if you've reduced the amount of negative feelings that you have about that person or situation, you're on the right track.
Right. I actually know a lady who she's in her 70s now, and physically she is a lovely woman. She's beautiful to look at. You know, she just, I catch myself wondering what she looked like when she was younger, but she still looks spectacular. She is the most wretched person I've ever met in my life. She cannot forgive or forget anything or anybody, and to be honest with you, the toll that it has taken on her physically is just beyond comprehension. She's had over 30 surgeries.
Oh, my heavens.
30. She's a severe hypochondriac, and I look at her and I listen to her. I don't anymore. I finally just had to cut the connection. She was wearing me out. But
yeah,
I would listen to her, and I could see it so clearly. You're doing this to yourself. You're killing yourself. Yeah, all of it was self-inflicted because she could not forgive and forget. And she was a big part of my evolution, too. So I'm not doing that. I will not do that. To myself, it was just so hideous to watch.
Yes, I see other people who carry that forgiveness, and they wonder why they don't have friends, they don't have the kind of support system, or they wonder why they're so ill, like you described with your client.
Yeah, she's terribly ill, and now it's mentally ill as well. So, and it's all self-inflicted just because, you know, she just either didn't understand that she's responsible only for herself and her own thoughts and not everybody else's, or she just couldn't forgive whatever anybody did to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very sad. But I'm glad that she came into my life and was in my life for so long because it was a huge lesson for me. Huge. And any time I start getting a little bit irritated with somebody, I just her face pops into my head and I'm over it instantly. Like, okay, moving on.
Well, she was a teacher for you, wasn't she?
She absolutely was.
That's really wonderful.
Yeah. So how do you define forgiveness? I mean, if you were talking with somebody, say that you're counseling a member of our audience, we have somebody in the chat room who I'm thinking of and she's asking some questions. What do you tell her? What is forgiveness and why should she forgive someone?
Forgiveness sometimes has a bad connotation. I know, for example, my husband doesn't like the word, so he is okay with the words acceptance or calm. So forgiveness really is getting to that place inside yourself where you feel calm about the situation, where you've able to let go of the past. And the exciting thing about that is that it's kind of an addictive feeling once you get used to it. It's not such a hard thing to do anymore because you understand that the pleasure is in letting go and that there's pain in holding on to those things from the past. Am I answering the question that you answered?
I think so. And part of my question, too, and it was unspoken because I hadn't quite gotten there, but you had mentioned journaling, which I think is a tremendously important thing to do. So how would that help in the forgiveness process, journaling?
Oh, it is so wonderful because nobody gets hurt when you journal. And so you're writing what you feel in your deepest thoughts and feelings. You are writing about things that you may have not told anybody in the past. And once you're done writing, you can either rip it up or you can just close the book and put it away in a safe place. And one interesting story of one of my clients, just to show how safe it can be to journal, is that he would type his journaling every day. Great client because he works so hard on himself. And he would do it on his computer in the early
days. I do, too.
Oh, good.
Mine's password protected. It's perfect.
There you go. Well, he would get to the end of his journaling every morning, and he wouldn't save the document. So there was no trail, no trace of what he was writing about. And I use that story to say that you needn't and mustn't let anybody read your journal, and he was so concerned about it that he just never saved it. But the other point is just the act of writing it down, getting it out of our primitive emotional brain, which is like a little bitty child within us, and getting it on the paper so we can read it back and use our higher processing skills in our brain, our analytical brain, to look at it. There's an amazing amount of healing that happens when you do that. So I definitely recommend journaling to anyone who would like to forgive.
It's very cathartic. Once you kind of just spill that out onto the pages, I find it incredibly cathartic. And then you can go back and look at it and go, what in the world was I so mad about anyway? It seems so petty down the road sometimes.
So you actually keep a hold of yours, even though it's password protected, right?
It's password, but with big time password protected.
big time.
You know, there's times that I don't even want to read it. I mean, it's part of going back into a place where it just wasn't good. So I will oftentimes go back, and if I have really moved on from something that was just so painful, or just such a huge part of my life, I will go back and kind of like your friend, I just get rid of it. I don't want to see it again. It's done. My mind has been changed. The way I think about it has been changed, and I'm through with it. I don't need to see it again. It's kind of like the only thing I can liken it to, I guess, is when the Twin Towers came down, many years ago, I sat there and I watched and I cried and I wiped my eyes on my cat and I cried some more. And my husband, poor Sawyer, I mean, I would just pick him up and dry my face with him. He's a 14-pound cat, so that wasn't, the easiest thing. But he was very patient. And my husband came home after about 3 days of, he would come in, I'd be on the window seat just sobbing. And he came in the third day, and he looked at me, and he looked at the remote. He took the remote, and he said, honey, you've seen these images. They're in your head. They're not going to go away. You don't need to see them again. And he was right, and I never looked at them again. And I look at some of the journaling that I've done in the past when I've just been just out of my mind, I guess, with anger or hate or whatever it was that was driving me at the time. I don't need to see that again. So I go back and I get rid of it. I purge.
Your husband was so wise to tell you to
Wasn't he?
Yes, turn off.
He absolutely was. And that phrase has stuck with me all of these years. I have seen those images, whether they're my images in my head, or there's something I've seen somewhere else. I've seen them. Now I've processed them. I've analyzed them. I'm done.
Great advice. Great advice to everybody. I was going to add that one very cathartic way to deal with your journal is to take those pages where all the anger and bitterness are. I think you mentioned that there are some pages where you just don't even want to read them again.
Mm-mm.
Tear them up and burn them. Go out in your
backyard. Burning's good.
Yeah. Put them in your grill. In a safe place, please. Let's not have any burned down houses because of this. But in a safe place, go and burn your journal and do it as a ritual. Do it very solemnly. And it makes you feel so good. And you just see those anger feelings go up in smoke, almost literally.
Yeah. It's very cleansing.
Very much so.
Very much. So, is forgiveness, this is a goofy question, is forgiveness for sissies? Can men forgive?
Oh, no, but I think some people think that you have to be a sissy to forgive, or if you forgive, you're a sissy, you're not being a strong person. And I love Gandhi because he was the one who said, forgiveness is never for the weak, forgiveness is an attribute of the strong. So it takes someone who has the strength and the emotional, spiritual, and intellectual maturity to step back from the situation and see it from a larger perspective rather than just holding on to, oh, I'm so hurt and it's all about me. But if you step back and say, within the span of a lifetime, is this really going to matter, or what does it matter from a spiritual perspective? And so that is why it takes a strong person to forgive. It's not for sissies.
Well, and I think when you mention the spiritual perspective, a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not really religious, so, you know, why should I forgive? That's a biblical thing. It's not. It's not at all. I mean, certainly it is a biblical component to it, but you don't have to have, you know, strong belief in God or go to, you know, Church of Christ or the Catholic Church to be able to forgive. In fact, I think that if people are trying not to forgive because they don't want to be considered Christian or religious, that I do come across that. Do you come across that?
Yes, I do.
And they resist it just because of that, you know, I don't want to be considered a religious freak. Oh, my gosh. You just want to smack them in the head.
Well, the antidote to that really is that we do it for ourselves. We do it so that we clear out our emotional energy so that we can move on in life unfettered by the past.
Mm-hmm.
So for those people who don't like the spiritual aspect of forgiveness, I just really emphasize the personal growth and the personal freedom that comes from it.
That's perfect. So when should you try to forgive? I know that it's difficult when you're fresh out of, you know, some kind of angst-filled situation. It's very difficult to forgive because you are angry or you're hurt. When should you start that forgiveness process? Or when do you know it's time?
Mm-hmm. The first thing that we need to do is forgive ourselves for not forgiving immediately.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yes, because forgiveness comes on our own time. And there are certain people, like the lady that you mentioned who's in her 70s, she's probably never going to forgive, and she'll...
No, and she's lost her family. Her children don't speak to her. It's really sad.
Isn't that sad?
It's very.
Anyway, we're all on our own timeline for forgiveness, and I have to laugh at myself. There are times when I just can't forgive, and I'm supposed to be the expert, but I forgive myself because I know that in time I will do it. For instance, a colleague and friend of mine hurt me several months ago, and just I kind of carried it around for a while, and I said, I know I'm going to forgive this person. After a while, they said some unkind things, and I finally got to the point just a couple weeks ago where I woke up and I could say, that was just her, and it has really nothing to do with me, and I feel calm about it. I have forgiven her.
Mm-hmm.
So we all are on our own timeline, and we have to be patient with ourselves. But just by the fact that you're listening to this call and you're thinking about forgiveness, you're ahead of the pack, and that probably forgiveness will come in its own time. I just sold a book to someone, and I said, you know, even if you don't have time to read this book or to work through the exercises in it, put it underneath your pillow, because just
mm-hmm.
the fact that you've bought my book, and by the way, it's at www.aforgivenessjournal.com or also on Amazon, just by the fact that you bought this book means that you are willing to consider the possibilities of forgiveness, and it's amazing what will happen if you just kind of put it away, know it's not there, or know it's there, but not really think about it, and you may just come to forgiveness naturally.
Mm-hmm. I think David Hawkins talks about a similar principle in his book, Power versus Force, where he says, you know, you can oftentimes put a book or something that is very powerful close to you, like under a pillow or on your desk, and I'm paraphrasing, this is not how he says it, but basically by osmosis, you start to feel better. And you start to kind of reach out for different solutions.
Exactly. The energy that is inherent in my book or whatever book that you want to incorporate into your life is there.
Mm-hmm.
And just by having it near you, I think, is a step in the right direction, and that energy eventually permeates you. It's kind
yeah.
of a neat thing. It gets into quantum
yeah.
physics and spirituality, which, of course, is where everything intersects anyway.
Exactly, exactly. So what suggestions do you have for, let's say, a business owner? We're not going to talk too much about personal things today, but, you know, business owners who need to forgive, like in your case, you know, a partner or, you know, somebody who's a friend of yours. What do you do? What suggestions do you have?
First of all,
what steps can they take, I guess?
First of all, I want to remind everyone that forgiveness really is for you, and that the benefits way outweigh and are really beautiful and pleasurable to the pain that you carry around without forgiving. So that's the very first thing that I would suggest. The second thing is, well, I need to give a plug for my book, and that's at www.aforgivenessjournal.com, because it walks you through a 7-step process. It's very concrete. What I found before I wrote the book was that everyone tells you to forgive but doesn't tell you how to forgive, and this process really walks you through some baby steps so that it finally at the end of the 7th step you're there. And it doesn't necessarily have to take a long time, but it helps you, it gives you the how of forgiving. And
well, if it gets you started down the right path, you can take as long as you need, as long as you know that there is a path to take.
Yes. And I just wanted to mention that it's not necessarily hard to do, but once you start down the path, as you say, then sometimes the other steps just come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So we mentioned
I'm sorry. Go ahead, and I'll ask you in a second.
I was just going to say that the process begins in something that we mentioned before, is to really process your emotions. Because I think some people think that forgiveness is just stuffing away all the anger and bitterness and resentment that you have and just putting it away in some deep, dark closet in your heart or mind. And that's not what forgiveness is all about. It's really acknowledging the humanness and the normalcy of how you felt about it. Someone hurt you, and that's okay to feel that way, but we need to process through it. So that's the very first step in this process, and then we go through and help you get perspective and look at it from a different angle, and then we can start the forgiveness process itself.
Well, I think a lot of times, and this is just my observation, I think a lot of times people get hurt feelings or they get crossways with somebody because they're relying on what their perception of the other person's perception is, which is remarkably silly.
Mm.
But we always do it. So how do you have a way that people can just say, you know, it's their perception. They're entitled to it. It's not mine. I'm
mm-hmm.
not in charge of it.
Mm-hmm. I like to think that they are from another country or another planet.
There you go.
And they have...
That's perfect.
You know, they have different ways of looking at things than we do. And one of the most powerful empathy and forgiveness questions that I ask is, what in my background or my belief system would make me act the same way that this other person is acting? What perhaps would have happened to me last night that would have made me act in the same way? And once you start thinking through that, then you kind of get out of that me-centered thing. I can't believe they did this to me.
Right.
And I never would have done it this way. Well, of course you never would have done it this way, because you don't have the same background beliefs, life experiences that the other person has. So they're really
mm-hmm.
from another country or another planet because of
See, I just assume that everybody is different from me. And I just assume that they're thinking their own thoughts. And whatever it is, let's say they're focused right now, I'm speaking of, you know, just one person, maybe. That person may have an absolute concrete idea what they're thinking about a certain specific, event right now. Now, 10 days later, when they look back at it, it's going to be a completely different perception. So you can't even depend on your own perceptions half the time. So... To get mad and angry at somebody else for your perceived perceptions of what they are thinking is just silly. It's not logical, it's not rational, and I try not to do it.
I love what you're saying. You said at the very beginning that you assume that everyone thinks differently than you.
I know it.
I would just like to underline that and put it in bold letters for everyone who's listening to this call, because that is really... If you can get to that understanding, then forgiveness comes much easier for you.
Well, go great. Live in your left brain. It's a very nice place to be, because you're logical, you're rational, and you know it's just easier to take something out, examine it, play around with it a little bit, go, ooh, nice and shiny, and then put it away.
There you go.
And that's how I
deal
with things like that. You know, I just take it out, examine it, and... If it doesn't feel quite right the first time I examine it, I may examine it a couple more times. The third time, I'm done. Moving
on. There you go. Good. It's a good rule to live by.
It has to be. It's the only way I can survive. So.
Good for you.
So let's just say that you know, you're in a regular workforce, which not too many of us are. We all, we're online entrepreneurs. We're serial entrepreneurs. We kind of march to our own drum. We wake up every day with a cast iron stomach. We just know that failure is not an option for us. Well, somebody's calling me. Let's assume that somebody is in an office situation where there's an awful lot of office politics, and he said, she said, and blah, 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 blah. How do you kind of get past that and determine who at work needs the most forgiveness so you can maybe kind of calm things down in that work environment?
I typically say that the person that needs the most forgiveness in your work environment is your boss if you're in an office
yeah.
situation. And
yep.
Because we all rag on the boss, and we don't walk a mile in their shoes. There's a lot of times when bosses can't tell us some of the things that would make us feel better about the situation. They have HR constraints, or they have budgetary constraints, or whatever it is. So I think they need the largest measure of forgiveness and compassion because they're such an easy target. And
and
understandably so, because the leader in an organization really sets the tone for the rest of the folks, and if they're not doing a great job, everyone suffers from it. I just wanted to give a little story about a coaching client that I worked with who was having trouble with her boss, and what we suggested was that she would take the two-week challenge, and I say that with a smile because it is a challenge. But do you remember the old fable? I think it was about see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil.
Yeah, the three monkeys.
I think that's
an Aesop's fable, I believe, though. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And that's what I ask you to do in the two-week challenge, and I asked this woman to do it, which was to think nothing evil, or to catch yourself when you were thinking something bad about her boss, and to redirect that out of the rut in her brain, which was going to, oh, he's so mean to me, he's a bad boss, to another thought, which was, he's doing the best he can, I honor him for that, I bless him.
Mm-hmm. So you're making a new muscle memory.
Exactly, in the ruts of your brain.
Right. And there's actually a physical, I know, we've talked about this before on the show with other people, there's actually a physical cable that takes place, and I can't explain it right now, but Colin Arthur Weeb was talking about these cables that your brain creates, that if you have all these negative thoughts, these cables get massive in your head, and they've done MRIs to prove that. It's crazy. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
But the hopeful thing is that there's something called neuroplasticity, which just means that you can repave or you can break those cables the analogy that you used, and you can create new cables in your brain.
Right.
And it happens over with repetition.
So you're saying if you're kind of just instantly aggravated with somebody, no matter, you know, just because you've trained yourself to maybe not respect or care too much about this person, you can instantly catch yourself and say, oh, you know, instead of saying, oh, God, he's such a jerk. So, well, you know, she looks kind of nice today. I like his haircut, or, you know, something. Just switch your mind. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So change your mind,
in
other words.
Change your mind about that person and dwell on the positive aspects of that person.
Mm-hmm.
So see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. And do it for 2 weeks. And the amazing thing with my client is that she'd gotten a poor performance review, and 6 months later after having done this exercise, she got her mid-year performance review, and all the demerits, quote, posts that she'd had on her first one were completely gone, and she asked him, well, you know, what's with this? He said, you fixed everything I asked you to. And she doesn't believe that she actually changed her behavior or her performance on the job, but just that she changed her mind, her attitude about her boss, and that just made the relationship so much more smooth, which is what it's all about.
Right, and his perception of her changed because she was no longer, you know, waving animosity at him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
So we change ourselves within, and then our outer world kind of comes into step with it.
Well, you are what you think. You know,
exactly.
My grandmother said this all of my life. She said two things that I poo-pooed back in the day. She said, you are what you eat and you are what you think. And I thought, you're right. That was just too simple for me. Boy,
wow.
Was she right. And how wrong was I? Yeah, very. Yeah, and I would just, okay, Grandma, I know. And, you know, I would just kind of, you know, make nice, but I didn't believe a word of it. Shame on me. So,
well, it's wonderful that you got those seeds planted in your little girl brain, though, because they certainly are germinating and growing now.
Oh,
now
she's been gone for years.
True.
And I hear those words every day. They never go away.
Bless her.
They never go away. Mm-hmm. She's with me all the time just because
awesome.
Of those two little sentences. So we're talking about, you know, bosses in the workplace. So let's assume that the leader of the office is the boss. It's not always the case, but let's assume that it is. How would they incorporate forgiveness into the workplace? Are there steps that the boss can take to create an atmosphere of forgiveness?
Yes, it certainly is. And it is really beneficial to create that atmosphere because you actually get better productivity and better teamwork. And people, we know that people who are engaged in the workplace produce much more and are more loyal to the corporation. So, yes, what the boss can do is create a sense of a learning environment where people aren't afraid of making a mistake. Because when we're afraid of making mistakes, we don't take any risks and we don't innovate. And when we know that we're going to get our hand slapped, figuratively, when we make a mistake, we don't try anything. So I have this lovely story about my own experience when I was in my early, very early part of my career. I was supporting a software package that it was the accounting system, and it was new. It was new software, and we all know that new software has bugs in it. Well, I couldn't get this software to reconcile, but I got it to within a dime of reconciliation, and I worked for a week on this. And I finally went into the CFO's office, and I said, I've got it to within 10 cents of reconciling. And I pulled out of my pocket a dime, and I said, would this be good enough for you if I just paid you the 10 cents and we went on? And she started laughing, but I could also hear that it was kind of a hysterical laugh. And she really said, no, Kristen, that's not good enough. You have to prove to me that the software works. So I went back to my office, and obviously she had picked up the phone and talked to my boss on my way back to the office, because as soon as I walked in, I hear this, hey, Kristen, I need to see you, from my boss. And I thought, I'm going to be fired. I'm going to be out on my butt. And I walked in, and this boss was so forgiving. It's the best boss I ever had. She said, I got a call from the CFO, and I heard that you gave her a dime instead of reconciling the books. And I said, yeah, kind of real chagrined. And she said, I applaud you using humor, but that's not good enough. Let's get you a programmer to help you work through this and get to the bottom of it. So my whole point there is that she was so forgiving, and she recognized that I was a high performer, a high potential performer, and she kept my loyalty. I was so loyal to her, I would go to the mat for her because of the way she treated me. And look what she did. She gave me support in my learning and a solution. And we got it done in 3 days. So after I spent 5 days just spinning my wheels, we were able to get it done. So that's what happens when the boss creates that forgiving learning environment, where it's okay to make a mistake, it's okay to make a joke with the CFO of one of your biggest customers, but let's get it right and let's support these people who have a lot of potential to learn.
That is a brilliant story. And it is. I mean, if you come up with a solution rather than just banging somebody around the head verbally or even with silence, sometimes silence can just be abusive, I think. But I think the fact that she supported you and understood what you were doing and recognized what you were doing, recognized your potential, and then offered a solution, I think was brilliant.
It is, and that story just epitomizes what happens, how you should act as a boss, and the benefits of it. So bless her. She's still a friend of mine, and I still keep in touch with her. She was the greatest boss.
Oh, that's nice. And that's something that I'm sure plays into what you're doing now. You have that to work on, and you know, it helps you connect with other people when you're telling them what can go on in the workplace, good as opposed to bad.
Yeah.
Great story.
Of course, we can learn from bad examples, too. I think sometimes those are very powerful also. about how not to be as a boss and how to not be forgiving. But she was certainly the positive example of a really great boss.
Very nice. Well, I know a lot of forgiveness starts from childhood. You know, people carry around an awful lot of baggage if they're willing to. And, you know, a lot of it's, oh, you know, I didn't have a good childhood, or my mommy was mean to me, or my daddy left, or you know, there's so many stories that you hear. What do you tell people about that? I mean, what advice can you give adults who are trying to forgive and forget their childhood?
Mm-hmm. The first thing is to realize that you were a young child and that you were not able to defend yourself as well as you could right now. So you need to give yourself a lot of love and compassion. You also need to forgive yourself for anything that you felt like you might have been, might not have done or did poorly. But to remember what we've talked about before, that forgiving frees you from the past. It allows you to walk on a well-paved road rather than walking through quicksand. And that by forgiving your parent, you are able to free yourself to have a happy, joy-filled, productive life
mm-hmm.
that's not fueled by anger and resentment.
Well, like we said, those are the two things that can just ruin you. You know, another thing my grandmother said, bless her heart, she's here today, I guess, but she said to me one time, she was a very tiny woman, and she had this English rose complexion. I mean, she just had the most porcelain skin. I loved to just look at her. She was just so pretty. And we were talking one day just kind of about nothing. She was not a judgmental woman at all. In fact, I used to think in my, you know, my lunacy that she was fairly simple-minded, which, of course,
really?
Now I know she was. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, that's how arrogant I was.
Hmm.
When you're young, you're very arrogant. And I thought, well, she's just not simple-minded. I put that badly, that she was a simple kind of a person. Never said anything ugly about anybody, never had anything unkind to say. One of the things that she said was, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all, which, of course, is tremendously wise. But somehow we were on the subject of faces, and we were just talking about different things. And she said, honey, she said, you can tell an unhappy woman when you look at her in repose and her mouth is all turned down.
Hmm.
And I said, oh. And it's true. If you're looking at somebody, you know, in the grocery store, or you're just kind of wandering around and somebody's not really animated or they're not speaking with somebody else, you can almost tell what their life is like by looking at their face in repose when they're not paying attention. It's an interesting thing.
That is really a neat thing.
I'm telling you, look at, most particularly women, I think men can, you know, hide it a little bit better, but you can tell an unhappy woman from six paces.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Lots of wisdom from your grandmother today.
I'm telling you, my little English grandma, bless her heart.
Well, bless her heart.
But it's true, and I will find myself, looking at people when they're in repose and when they're not aware that I'm looking at them, you can almost see their history written on their face.
Oh,
and I'm not talking smoking or sun damage or drinking.
Right.
I'm talking the sheer unhappiness of their lives is written on their faces.
My goodness. So that gives us compassion and the ability to forgive, too.
It does.
And we just don't know what kind of
You don't want to do that to yourself. I mean, you just don't want to be that woman in the grocery store that her mouth is turned down and she just looks wretched. You don't want to be that person.
Yes. And you don't want to be that person, so you're going away from that pain, but you also want to be a person that lives in joy, lives in complete fulfillment of their God-given talents. And
yeah.
And we can do that by clearing away all the barriers in our life through forgiveness and getting to that calm. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Calm is perfect. I mean, what a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yes, thank you to my husband for that. He was the one who came up with that word. I was like, wow, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
See, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your book, because I find this just a fascinating title. Why is your book a journal? What does that mean?
It's a journal because it's really an experiential book. It has room in it for you to write in the journal, it's interesting. Some people say, I don't want anybody to see my journaling, so I use the questions in the book, and then I write in my own journal that's private and I can keep locked away. But there is room in the book for you to write, and again, it goes back to the power that you and I have both experienced of journaling, which mm-hmm. is you get it out, you're able to talk about your anger at someone, and you really can describe that and use the most angry, forceful,
yeah,
strong words.
That you produce.
Yeah, bad things, yeah. You can just let it out, let your heart out, and where do we get a chance to do that unless we're on the therapist's couch, which is also something that you might want to do if you're really, really
stuck.
If you're really, really bad. And it's also really good to get a friend who's got a friendly ear. The second step in my book is to talk it out. And I always...
But not over and over again, right?
You're reading my mind.
Keep going over the same thing over and over and not doing anything about it, because you'll lose friends doing that.
And you also create that cable in your brain. Native Americans have a saying of, we will allow you to talk about your hurt 3 times, and after that we turn our back on you. And
that's where my 3-strike came from, because we're Indian. We're Indian and Irish and English, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Wow, that's great. So that comes from that tradition of, yes, mm-hmm. talk about it 3 times, but then shut your mouth, because...
Do something about it or move on.
Move on, because you're creating that rut in your brain that goes to the, oh, isn't it awful, I'm such a victim kind of a thing, rather than moving on and getting to... So actually what we're now talking about is the need to prevent forgiveness before it gets rutted in your brain or that cable gets built in your brain. And
now, how do you do that?
Well, it's what we're talking about is talk about it only 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
The see no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil is a great way to stop yourself if you haven't gotten too far. And the other way is to, again, this comes from my wise husband. He bought this bumper sticker that says, don't believe everything you think. Which I just love. And the way I interpret that is that we're all, because of our backgrounds, we're all conditioned to have an immediate reaction to something that happens to us. And
right.
it's because how we were brought up, our beliefs, our religion or lack of religion, all those things combine to bring us to the present moment, and something happens to us and we think, oh, that horrible person, how could they hurt me? I'm such a victim. And it's at that point when it first happens that you need to not believe everything you think, because your first perception is that ingrained one. And
right.
I challenge you to question that and to put it through another filter and to say, well, how else could I interpret this?
Instead of going into fight or flight, you sit down and analyze it?
Yes, exactly. And that's hard to do. Because obviously when we're in fight or flight, we're in our emotional brain. But later then, try to remember that this was your first reaction and then challenge it. And
mm-hmm.
say some of the empathy questions that we talked about before. How could I view this from a different perspective? How am I going to look at this at the end of my life? What could possibly be...
Oh, good one.
Yeah, isn't that a good one?
Yeah.
Or here's another one that's very similar. If I had 30 days to live and I knew I was going to die in a month, would that change my perspective on what just happened to me? I like that one,
too. I reckon it would.
Yeah.
Big time.
And then from a spiritual point of view, you know, I believe we're all God's children and God loves the essence of us. What is the essence of that person that's really coming out here? What is it? How can you view that person as a good person at their core? So all of these things are good questions to help you not believe everything you first think, with the understanding is that, you know, you do have an emotional reaction at first, and you need to give yourself time to get out of that, but then challenge yourself.
That's excellent advice, you know, because too many people go into fight or flight, and they stay there, and that's just not good.
Hey, me too. I've done it too.
Me too.
Learning,
that's why I know it's not good.
I'm going, so,
yeah.
Right, I think we all have.
Well, yeah, and, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure you come across this with your clients, it can be one of the hardest things in the world to do is to sit down and get really introspective with yourself and take that bright, white, shining light and shine it on yourself, it is flinch-making. It's hard to do. But how do you tell people they really, really need to do it, and what steps can they take to stop flinching away and, you know, say, I'm just going to go eat a cookie. I can't do this. Yeah, how do you coach them through that?
I suggest journaling again.
There you go.
We really need to have you look at yourself, do a self-examination through the essence and the vehicle of journaling. So you might want to take a look at your life and write down the history of your life, write your autobiography or maybe just an outline form by year, what happened to you, and see how you've come to be the person that you are in this moment, because you're a product of your history.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to look at some of the things that you're proud of and some of the things that you're not so proud of, and really take an inventory that way.
I think you'll find that you're mostly proud of everything, but the ones you're not proud of are pretty big. You know, they're fairly life-altering in some cases.
And that's where self-forgiveness really comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And self-forgiveness is such an important thing to do. We're actually coming up into the time in the Jewish calendar that are called the Days of Awe. That's the 10 days between the two high holy days of the Jewish year. And it's at a time where they say that you need to make right with your fellow human beings, where you go and apologize to people for the wrongs that you've done in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
And I really recommend that we do that as part of that self-examination. Who is it that I need to apologize to? This also is in concurrence with the 12-step program, where we take an inventory and then make amends,
mm-hmm.
I think is the words that the 12-step program uses. But we can all do that. And this is a great time of year to do it. I think it's also kind of the beginning of the school year. It's time to look back over the past year.
Autumn is coming.
Yeah.
You know, people tend to get a little bit more mellow, and, you know, they're anticipating the holidays. So, you know, I find that September, October, people seem to be a little bit more human during those months. I don't know why.
That's a great observation. And it's a great time to do this self-examination that we're talking about. And I already have a list of people that I need to apologize to next week, because that's the starting of the Days of Awe. And I'm just going to call them up and say, I'm sorry, and I ask you for your forgiveness. That's really the other side of this forgiveness coin, is to be big enough to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually helps you in your self-forgiveness, too, because you've done what you can to make amends.
Right, and you have that feeling of, well, okay, you know, the person said it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Maybe my perception was off, but I'm never doing that again.
Oh.
I'm never going to be that silly again. So
I
guess there's lessons to be learned there as well, if you go and make the attempt to apologize. And, you know, either you're going to be told, well, no, it's not as bad as you thought it was, or thank you, you know, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So again, lessons learned. Kristen, can we have a lot of questions in the chat room.
Yeah.
Do you feel like taking a couple of calls?
Sure. Are you going to read them to me?
Well, I've got one, and then I have somebody. We have a couple of people on the line, actually.
Super.
And then one of them, she's kind of saying, oh, instead of thinking negative thoughts, you turn around. That's back when we were talking. One question is, how do you forgive someone who did you wrong, such as throw out all your possessions? This sounds more like a personal question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get over that? First of all, I can answer that one. You go run over them with your car, and then, you know, that would be my first choice.
That's
the wrong one, huh?
Actually, I would suggest that you journal that. I want to run over you with my car. I'm so angry.
There you go. Yeah, I don't want to mess up the grill on my car.
That's exactly right. We don't want to do that.
There's consequences. It would cost me money.
So, yes, and I just want to say that my heart goes out to people who have really huge things to forgive in life, because humans do horrible things to other humans. And so, first of all, blessings to you that you're even here and thinking about forgiving, because you're on the right track.
Yeah, I think sounds like she's having a hard time.
Yes, and you need to give yourself a lot of compassion, a lot of forgiveness in this process. I certainly recommend, as we've talked many times during this call, about journaling about your thoughts and feelings in a really safe place, and then gradually working through some of the empathy questions that we talked about to give you some perspective on it, that this person was probably a product of their upbringing. What about that can you have some amount of compassion for that can help you get to that sense of calm that we've equated with it, forgiveness? And and just blessings on your journey that way. I just am so impressed that someone would be interested in forgiving with such a big burden on their shoulders.
Yeah, it's me too. In fact, I got a note from earlier this week. It said, boy, I'm going to be on that call. Okay. I'm glad to have you. I think we have a couple of people. Yeah, and I'll put her in touch with you. You know, she will probably want to look at your journal, no doubt. So anyway, we have a couple of people on the line. This is Denise. I'm here with Kristen Robertson. I'm sorry. Do you have a question for Kristen? Hello.
Hi, this is Judy, the journaling genius.
Aha. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi. So obviously, I'm a great advocate of journaling, being the journaling genius.
Yeah.
In the book, do you give techniques on how to write, or is it all free writing?
There are many exercises that have questions where you're asked to journal about them.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, the journaling is set up in the book with some really good examples of good journaling and bad journaling. As we've talked about before, you need to really let loose and write about things that are deep in your heart that perhaps you haven't been able to express before. But it sounds, Judy, like you'd have some suggestions also. Do you want to offer some?
Actually, I have decks of journaling gems cards, which are journaling prompts, and one of them actually is forgiveness. And I do start with forgiving yourself, because that's huge. And one thing I put in the chat room is Lisa Nichols, who is in The Secret and has written a book called No Matter What. She talks about forgiveness as, thank you for giving me this experience, because you get to learn the lessons that you needed to learn from it.
Exactly. And that's kind of, I think, what we were talking about in making that mental inventory of your life, that you look at all these things and you get to today's moment and go, wow, I'm here because of all of that. Thank you for the lessons I've learned.
Yeah.
Great.
And then the other thing I do is I suggest dialogue. And I do this in my journal with two different color pens. I'm a pen and paper gal, not an online. So,
me too.
And actually have a dialogue with somebody, you know, in your head, because you're doing it anyway. But as you say, getting it out of your head and onto paper gives you a different way to look at it. And I've actually done that and had my, you know, friends and clients do that. And it can make a huge, huge shift in that relationship without you ever actually having to have that conversation with them.
Oh, I love what you're saying. That's a great idea to write what they're saying to you in your head and write what you would say back to them.
Right, right. Awesome. Or letter writing.
Actually
write
never
them a
tried
letter.
That. I have a dialogue. It's one of the things I haven't
really
done.
Really powerful. Really, really powerful. I did it with a relationship that needed some shifting and that I was holding on to some stuff about, and it made a huge shift. Now, the other person, did they change? Probably not, but it certainly shifted my perspective on that relationship.
And because you've changed your energy in the relationship has changed. You know,
absolutely.
It just has to be by definition. So that's wonderful. Yes, writing a letter is one of my steps in my journal, so that we're right in sync there, Judy.
Cool. And then the whole thing, a lot of people say, is where to start? Because you face that blank page, and a lot of people, that just terrifies them.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you recommend for that?
I would recommend, well, what we do in the book is we first write it as if you're a reporter and you're just writing it for a newspaper article.
Oh.
So this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. So you do it all in third person, and that
just
gets
the facts,
you started.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, just the facts. And then you can get to, I think that's kind of starts the ink flowing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get to, you know, here was my interpretation, and here was how bad I felt about it, and here's how I got angry. And so I think that gets you started.
I like that. Thank you.
Good deal. You're welcome.
I talked to my cats. Does that count?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
What do you tell them, Denise?
Everything,
look,
I'm sure.
If they ever ratted me out, it would be really bad. That's all I can say.
Isn't that the wonderful thing, that they're unconditionally loving of you, and they'll let you say anything?
They do. and wipe my tears on them. But
oh, that's very sweet.
I do tend to talk to my cats if I'm really, if my husband's not home or if he just is probably not the best person to chat with about something that is really on my mind. I'll dialogue with the cat, and sometimes they talk back, sometimes they bite, but at least it's interactions.
But Denise only talked 3 times to them about the same subject.
Trust me. Yeah. Well, with Sawyer, it's only once because he's cranky. So
very good.
He's kind of my little watch cat, but I do. I tend to talk with them because they are alive and kind of chatting back at me, and for some reason, I just feel better.
That's awesome.
And I know that sounds odd, but it does work for me.
Yes, and for many people, pets are, because of that unconditional love, I think they're wonderful mirrors for us to speak to.
Well, and not only that, but you can journal about your pets as well, because they are such an intrinsic and important part of your life.
Absolutely.
I think many people, their pets are critically important, and I know in the pages of my journal, my cats show up as often as my husband does.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
They're part of your family.
Very much. Very much so. And they don't talk back or don't go out and get pregnant. They don't drive the car into a wall. So it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good.
It's all good. Well, Judy, do you have any further questions for Kristen? We're running out of time.
No, I think I'm good. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
well,
Judy.
Thank you.
Great to meet another advocate of journaling. It's been very powerful in my life and for the people that I touch too. So.
Same here. Nice to meet you.
You too. We should talk.
Well, you guys can meet up on Facebook.
Great.
And Kristen, I'll send you Judy's, I'll send you both an e-introduction by email.
Very good.
Thanks. So you can connect with each other.
Awesome.
So listen, thank you, Kristen, for your time here today. It has been a fabulous call. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. How fun.
Oh, thank you. And I think you gave some really wonderful information to the people who are listening in, to people who will download this and put it on their iPod and take it to the gym with them, because that's a good place to work out the anger and angst as well.
Excellent.
So thank you again so much, and thank you everybody that was listening to the show in the chat room. And this show will be available for download in about an hour. This is Denise Griffiths and Kristen Robertson. I am so sorry.
No worries.
I have that name in my head for some reason. I was talking with a Robinson this morning.
Everybody so messes up my name.
Denise Griffiths and Kristen Robertson wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you again next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.